Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I am your host, Doug Wortham. On today's show, we'll have a conversation with the Women Veterans Program Manager at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. Then we'll hear from a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company. And lastly, we'll get an update from the Minnesota Patriot Guard. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
On September 18, 1947, President Harry Truman signed the National Security Act, effectively creating the United States Air Force as an independent armed service equal to the Army and Navy. Throughout its entire history, the Air Force has played a key role in the defense of our nation while simultaneously conducting numerous peacekeeping and humanitarian missions. By harnessing cutting-edge technology and employing dedicated airmen, the Air Force remains the world's leader in air, space, and cyberspace. Minnesota is proud to have two Air National Guard units, the 133rd Air Left Wing in the Twin Cities and the 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth. And let's not forget about our Air Reserve brethren at the 934th Air Left Wing in the Twin Cities. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, please join me in wishing the Air Force a happy 73rd birthday. Aim high, fly, fight, win.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System is Emma O'Brien. Emma is the Women Veterans Program Manager, where she is responsible for planning and facilitating appropriate, high-quality services for women veterans in the Women's Comprehensive Health Center and across all points of care in the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. Emma, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug. Great to be here.
Yeah, nice to see you. And you've been on the show a couple of times, so this is old hat for you. But, you know, I think the last times that we've spoke or that you've been on the show, you know, we've been talking about this women's clinic. And as a matter of fact, it's been on the radar for a long time. The director has talked about it multiple times.
Yes.
But finally, a shovel went in the ground, huh?
A shovel went in the ground last Friday. It was a fantastic day for a groundbreaking and a new building at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center campus. We had a number of women veterans present, staff of the medical center, as well as some of our elected officials. So,
yeah, I understand that Senator Klobuchar was out there, Senator Smith, Congresswoman McCollum was out there. And, of course, I imagine that the people who've just been involved with this for a long time were just extremely excited to finally see something that resembles progress.
It certainly has been a long road to breaking ground for this building. It predates my time at the VA. I came in 2019, and we were still designing the space. And then had some delays with COVID and budgetary things, and finally contracted for our construction in August. So
yeah, it was a great deal.
Thank you.
And so, you know, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the other things specific to the clinic, but just remind us, if everything went perfectly, when do we think that door would be opening and we'd have the ribbon cutting ceremony?
Yes, we are hoping to have doors open and be providing care in that space in summer of 2026.
Perfect. And, you know, I think it's interesting that, of course, we're creating a space for our women veterans, which is extremely important for our women veterans to have their own space. But I'm wondering if you might be able to talk through a little bit about how we got to where we are. And there's kind of like this timeline that you've talked about as it relates to women's care. You know, when did we first really see that our women veterans needed specific care and kind of what that's looked like up until present day?
Yeah. Well, in care of women veterans dates back to 1923. Where care at the VA began to recognize women veterans and provide those services. So we celebrated our 100-year anniversary last year. In 1975, women veterans were only 4% of the veteran population. And by 2022, we've now made up 17.5%. And that's according to the Pew Research Center. And so as that percentage of women veterans has increased, we've seen an increase in need for gender-specific services. So specifically the Minneapolis VA, we began our journey in the 1980s. 1985 opened a breast care detection clinic. And there are still veterans receiving care with us who got care in that first clinic. And then in 1988, we advanced that to become a women's preventive medicine clinic. So we offered cervical cancer screenings, additional screening services for chronic disease. And in 1993, we were one of four VA medical centers in the country to be granted funds that open the first of four women's veterans comprehensive healthcare centers. And what this means is that women veterans were now able to get those screenings that we were offering in that preventive medicine clinic, as well as their primary care and gynecology care in one place. So they didn't have to come back for more than one visit to get all of their care completed.
And so, you know, so you said, you know, for over 100 years, the VA has been providing women veteran health care. And obviously the amount of care or type of care has changed over that time frame. Does that mean, do you know, maybe you don't know this, but does that mean that women just couldn't receive care at the VA prior to 1923? Or is just that's when they kind of recognized that we probably need to start carving some specific services out for women veterans?
I believe that is when women were first served by VA. So I'm not yeah. specifically.
No problem at all. But the important thing is that we've seen this progression of care that's offered. Because I imagine for a woman veteran, the worst thing that can happen is you go in for care and then, you know, the doctor saying, okay, we need to do this, this, or this. And then they're like, but we can't do it. So now we've got to farm you out to someone else. And now that's another day, another appointment, you know, more time off of work or whatever the case is. And so you try to be very inclusive in providing as much care as possible.
We do. And we recognize that a lot of our patients travel a long distance to get this care. And so within our comprehensive women's health clinic, we will be able to provide not only their primary care and their gender-specific screenings, but also mental health care services, mammography screening, pharmacy, social work, nutrition services, and all with the goal of it being in one place.
And I think the director has said, and maybe you mentioned this previously too, but pretty much everything and anything minus childbirth, you should be able to take care of at that women's clinic.
So at the medical center,
yeah,
yes.
Medical center.
Yeah,
right,
thank
right,
you.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's an important thing to recognize is women veterans get their care in any place that a male veteran does, right? And so while the women's clinic provides this gender-specific primary care and specialty care, we know that women will continue to access the specialty services in cardiology or endocrinology, you know, in surgery, all of those areas. And so we want to be sure that they're able to get care there as well. That is appropriate and best quality.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense not to duplicate all of the provided services, but of course, you know, this clinic then is, you know, a special space for our women veterans and provide some of that more specialty care to specific to our women veterans. So we have just a few, about a minute and a half left in this segment. And one of the things that has been talked about with the director is there's going to be a process to officially name the women's clinic. And I'm just wondering if you might be able to touch on that for us and let our audience know how they might be able to be involved in that.
Yes, thank you. We are taking nominations to name the Women's Clinic space after a woman veteran with a connection to Minnesota or Western Wisconsin, which is included in our health systems catchment area. This is a way to honor the contributions of women veterans for their military service and their ongoing contributions to our community. It is part of the symbolic reason for this clinic is to recognize women as veterans and all they have done for our country.
Yeah. And so if they go out to the Minneapolis VA website, they'll be able to search for the VA Women's Clinic, and then they'll be able to provide some nomination information there. And, you know, absolutely, let's get those nominations in.
Yeah, it's been great to review some exceptional.
So you've received nominations already?
We have received some nominations, and nominations are open through the end of October. So,
well, that is awesome. We're going to hopefully get some more of our listening audience to do that. So, Emma, this is where we'll take a quick break, and then we'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the new Women's Clinic and some of the things going on over at the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In the studio with me is Emma O'Brien. And Emma works at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. She's the Women Veterans Program Manager. So, Emma, before we went into this break, we were talking about the clinic. You were talking about the process to go through to name. And during the break, you said, just go to the Google, type in Minneapolis VA Clinic name, and you'll find it there rather than going through this long web address I have here that I won't read off on the program. But I'm wondering if you might be able to just tell us that in the nomination process, what is that going to look like? How is it going to be selected?
Sure. So, nominations are open now, and, there's a nomination packet and it really goes through three areas, that will be, reviewing the nominees for one, military service. Second is community service. And then the third is really the impact that this nominee has had on the women veteran community. So how do they represent the community? What type of work do they do to support their fellow women veterans and issues pertinent to that group?
And so is the decision, the naming right, so to speak, is that decision made by the director or someone else have to get involved with that?
Well, we will have a diverse group of reviewers who will review these nomination packets, provide a scoring of those three areas, and then the top top reviewed nominees will go to our director and then finally on to Washington, D.C. for approval. So,
okay. So people should still get their requests in, fill out the forms, be as thorough as you can, and hopefully those nominations will move forward. And we're certainly looking forward to the unveiling of the naming for the Women's Clinic. So let's talk a little bit more about the clinic. You know, you're obviously not the contractor for the project, but I would imagine that you've got some of the inside knowledge, so to speak, of the project itself. You know, you are very involved as a program manager. So what can you tell us about the facility that's going to be built when it's in its when it's finally done? What's it going to look like?
Yes. So this will be a new building on the Medical Center campus, and it will be connected to the larger medical center. But have a public entrance for women veterans to enter through from the parking lot. And that is something that's very intentional. Women across the United States share in this experience of walking into the VAs, and it's called sort of this gauntlet phenomenon where they feel like all eyes are on them as the woman veteran. And some women feel unsafe and don't feel comfortable coming to VA for their care because of that experience. And so really having this direct entrance into the Women's Center is to reduce that feeling and that experience. So as this building is, it's a $14 million plus project, and will more than double our clinical space in for the women's clinic. It'll be just over 13,000 square feet. We will have exam space, procedure space, as well as consultative rooms for mental health, nutrition, social work services. We'll also have screening mammography included in this space. So with an ultimate goal that women can come for their annual exam and get their mammogram that same day in an adjoining appointment.
And then this is 100% federal funded, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's a good thing. And then you've already mentioned that with any luck, the doors will open in 2026. It could be spring, it could be winter, it could be fall, right? I mean, there's so much that can happen between now and then, but right now the projected time frame is in the year 2026.
We're shooting for 18 months, yeah.
18 months, yeah. Well, we'll plan for the best, right? What do they say? Yeah, anyway. All right, so
hope for the best.
Hope for, there
for
you
the
go.
Best.
Thank you. Yes. All right, so when the building is done, the door is open, you have the ribbon-cutting ceremony, and our first women veterans come in. They're going to see this brand-new space. You'll be able to tackle some of that feeling welcome issue that you described. Remind for us again about the types of services our women veterans will have to look forward to in that facility, knowing they'll still be able to get care in the larger VA, but what inside that building are they going to be able to get care for?
Yes. So I've mentioned primary care over and over again, and those who get their care at the VA, they know primary care is really their home at the VA. They manage all of their other care that goes out to specialty areas. So primary care, gynecology care, we'll continue to have urology care. I mentioned screening mammography as well as ultrasound. And we will now have our very own group appointment or shared visit classroom. And so we have a number of women-specific groups already that meet at the VA or meet virtually, and this will give us an additional space that really is geared for women veterans to have these meeting spaces to work together, support each other in health promotion and wellness. So
there's just going to be a ton of stuff, and you know we're really looking forward to what that's going to look like. And maybe you can just tell me, like, where does your passion come from on why, you know, why do you want to be the program manager out of the VA? And what does this mean to you? You know, what's driving you? What's motivating you?
Sure. Thank you. I think above all else is the veterans that we serve, right? We are aligned in this mission to care for women veterans, to provide the best evidence-based, holistic care to women who have served in the military. And we not only want to be the best VA, we want to provide the best women's health care anywhere. And that really drives me. Minneapolis VA is so fortunate to have leaders in research in women's health and leadership that supports additional services and building on these services to best serve women. And so I really do strive to carry out the mission of VA Women's Health in providing the best women's care anywhere.
And this isn't like it's something new to you. I mean, looking at your biography, and you've got a background in providing care for women. You've got inpatient, outpatient types of settings. You've got a master's of public health in maternal and child health, a bachelor of science in nursing. You've been working in the women's space for quite a while.
I have, yes. Thank you. It's my longtime passion and really such a privilege to be able to do so at the VA. You know, I started my nursing career in inpatient OB-GYN breast surgery, gynecological surgery, and pediatrics, and I knew I wanted to be in that space and feel really passionately passionately about the work that can be done in the community and in reaching women.
Yeah, so I want to just finish up on the last thing here. And, you know, first off, thank you for what you're doing, the input you have into, and the care I know that you'll be able to provide for our women veterans. I mean, we know the Minneapolis VA healthcare system is top-notch. I mean, it's consistently rated in the top for VA health. And, you know, everybody I talk to that's a patient, I myself am a patient, just receive fantastic care all the time. But I want to do a little bit more promoting about the VA. And so in the last 30 seconds here, can you just highlight some of the upcoming things that the VA's got going on?
Oh, I'd love to. So with some upcoming events for women veterans specifically, we're recognizing Breast Cancer Awareness Month in October, and we'll be tabling in the flag atrium of the medical center, and that is will be joined with our food pantry that occurs the second Tuesday of every month. There'll be our breast nurse navigators will be present and to talk to veterans about screening for breast cancer. We will recognize World Menopause Day on October 18th, and we have a women's wellness retreat coming up on October 22nd. Registration is still open for that. That will take place in Hudson, Wisconsin. We've done 2 past women's wellness retreats, but this is our first year to have 2 in 1 year because it's been so well received by the veterans who have attended.
That's awesome. And of course, we'll remind people the nominations, Google Minneapolis VA Clinic name, and they'll be able to find the nomination process for that. Emma, thanks so much for coming into Minnesota Military Radio and spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
You bet. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to speak to the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company, Replenix. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
On the third Friday of September each year, Minnesota recognizes the courage and sacrifices of our state and country's prisoners of war and missing in action. More than 500,000 Americans have been captured and interned as prisoners of war since the American Revolution. Prisoners of war have bravely endured the loss of the very freedom they fought to defend at the hands of their captors. Let us vow to never forget the sacrifices our prisoners of war and their families have made. Their courageous efforts have helped to build the strong foundation we have today, which continues to drive us forward. On this day, Minnesota will echo the creed inscribed on the black and white flags that fly in honor of America's prisoners of war and missing in action. And we renew our promise to our heroes that you are not forgotten.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Replenix is a distributor of cutting tools, abrasives, adhesives, safety products, and industrial supplies in Eden Prairie, Minnesota. On June 11th, a proclamation event was held to recognize Replenix as a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company for its efforts in supporting the military community. Here to share some insight about Replenix is the president and CEO, Matt Cohen, and the chief culture advocate and military mom, Sarah Wigdahl. Matt and Sarah, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. I'm glad that you're in the studio, and I appreciate it. And thanks for the work, the effort you've done with Replenix to go through the process to become a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company. I know that it isn't always an easy process, but Matt, I do want to start with you and just ask this question. Why? Why did you want to go through this process and become a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company?
Oh, Doug, that's a really easy question to answer. It wasn't my decision. The benefit of running a values-based company is that part of our purpose is to give back to the community at large. And we have a variety of military families. Sarah is a military mom. We have veterans and a community at Replenix that said, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon is the type of organization that we can partner with to live that part of our purpose, giving back to the community at large. And so when they came to me and said, this is something we want to do, it was a no-brainer, not only because it was supported by our purpose and by our employees, but it was a really great way to reconnect with our company's history of being a veteran-founded business.
And we do want to hear about the history, specifically about your grandfather. But, you know, you talk about giving back to the community and supporting the community. Let's talk about the military community real quick. What are some of the things that Replenix is doing in order to support the military community?
Replenix, as part of the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon process and getting engaged and getting our accreditation, we found a variety of ways to be involved. For several years, we've been delivering Thanksgiving turkeys around the state. We've been involved with adopting families over the holidays and creating stockings for them or going through their wish list and making sure that they get all the things off their wish list so that everybody can have a good Christmas. We have done yard work cleanup and helping veterans with things around their homes to make sure that their homes are functioning well. We also do an internal fundraiser and raffle, all the proceeds of which help us make those things possible for military families, like getting the dumpster when we're doing yard work and getting everything cleaned up.
Yeah, so just a lot of different ways. And, you know, you had mentioned about the history of Replenix and you know, your grandfather, who was an Army veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he started the company.
He did.
And so you're honoring his service, his legacy, if you will, by taking this next step forward here to be a Yellow Ribbon company. And what do you think he'd be saying right now?
My grandfather used to have an expression that anytime we did something well, we had good grades, we did something great in sports, he'd say he was so proud his buttons are bursting. And I really think that when he would look at the business now 78 years after he founded it, I think his buttons would be bursting with the pride of how we have chosen to honor not just his military legacy and the legacy of all of our veterans and military families, but the broader Minnesota military community. And then he'd tell me to get back to work.
Yeah, good grandfather right there. And so for you personally, what does this mean to you?
Yeah, it just really feels right, Doug, that there's this part of it that is a recognition of where we came from. And, you know, if it hadn't been for his veteran status, he wouldn't have gotten preferential bid treatment on surplus military supplies in the industrial space. We wouldn't have been able to start the business. And so there's a tremendous amount of gratitude that that I have for the Army and what it gave to my grandfather as a member of the Signal Corps. And so there's just that tremendous amount of being grateful. And then in addition to that, I'm so proud of our employees, that this is really an employee-directed activity. We've always said as a family that we want to give back to the community. And the fact that we've bounced around in other types of community activities was wonderful. But there's something especially enriching about honoring our military and honoring our military history and our military families. It's just really emotional.
One of the things that you said to me as we were prepping is you're not doing it because you want some special recognition. You're doing it because you feel it's the right thing to do. And so we appreciate that, and we appreciate you stepping up and, again, providing or going through the process and then providing the support that you do. I do want to make sure we get to Sarah here. We've only got a couple of minutes left in the segment. And so, Sarah, you're over there smiling when I said that you were a military mom. Tell us a little bit about your son.
My son is a Marine veteran. He became a Marine in 2016, and after finishing boot, went over to Iwakuni, Japan for 4.5 years.
Okay. And you're very proud of his service?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, obviously when you have served or you have people close to you that have served, like both of you have, obviously, I feel like there's a sense of patriotism or pride that comes along with that. So, Sarah, what does it mean to you to be a part of an organization, Replenix, that wants to support the military community?
It means a lot to me to know that the place where I'm spending a lot of my time and my efforts is there to support me should something come up with my son, or recognizing that other people in my situation might need additional assistance, and that there's support there for that. So you don't have to worry about what's going on at home with your service member, that there's people that work with you every single day that are there to support you and help you, and they've got your back.
Now, were you a part of the process to get the recognition and ultimately proclamation?
Yes, I am on the steering committee as executive support with all of the HR pieces that are required for the action plan.
And so as Matt was saying, you know, the employees came to him and said, we're going to do this. So I imagine there wasn't a lot of arm twisting, was there, on your part to get the support and the buy-in?
No, none at all.
Yeah, that's got to be a great feeling to have not only the CEO, president, saying, yep, I support this, but then knowing that you've got all of your entire team behind you 100% as well. It must have made it pretty easy.
It did. I mean, it was a struggle with all of the things that we have to do to earn that proclamation, but the team working together, the steering committee working together to get it done and accomplished was really great, all of the collaboration that happened.
And what was the total time that it took?
It took us about 18 months.
And that's pretty average, I think, mm-hmm. If you talk to our Yellow Ribbon gurus. Mm-hmm. So that's great. Anything that was the hardest, any hard step to get past in order to, you know, check that box?
The only thing that was a struggle for us is we are so small. We have right now, I think we're at 61 employees. And so having an organization of our size,
yeah,
it's, you know, there's, many hats. We all wear many hats. And so sometimes we don't have enough people to take on this community outreach or this, you know, HR function or you know, things like that. And so it falls on the same 3, 4, 5 people that are in the office that can do that. But yeah, Otherwise, that outside of the size of our organization being a challenge, I don't think we really hit any other roadblocks. Everything else was met with, yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
You know, Doug, just to piggyback on that, Replenix is the smallest beyond the Yellow Ribbon organization, I believe, in the state. And when Sarah talks about 68 employees, that's 68 employees that encompass the footprint of the business. But consistently, what she's really talking about is that there were 30 to 35 employees that are primarily located in Eden Prairie who really took the brunt of the work. And they really shouldered the work and created the drive and created the desire by the other members of the organization to want to step in. And that kind of leadership, I think Sarah's quite humble, but it was witnessed, it was seen, and it was a testament to her and the other leaders who really helped drive it through.
That's awesome. This is a great place to take a quick break. Then we'll come back. We'll continue talking about some of the process and other things that you guys are doing. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham, in the studio with me from Replenix. I've got Matt and Sarah continuing the conversation about becoming a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company. When we're going into break, Matt, you were talking about really the way the employees stepped up to take on all of these additional roles, because it isn't an easy process to go through that proclamation or to achieve the proclamation. So, again, great testament to the leadership. And you, of course, highlighted the leadership of Sarah, which is pretty cool. Now, Sarah, we talk about recruiting all the time, mm-hmm. right? And Marine Corps, some would argue, is probably the hardest branch of service for a mother to watch their son or child go off to serve in. But what would you say in your experiences, to other parents that might be having that conversation with their child about going off to serve in the military?
Whatever branch they decide they want to go into, my response would be the same. Let them do it. My son had so many wonderful experiences, so many life lessons. It has been very interesting and rewarding to see the man that he's become today. And when he separated from the military after his fifth year of service, he he had this confidence about him. And to see that continuing now in his public life, in his civilian life, they just learn so much. And you know, just be a listener. Listen to what they have to say. Be there. Be supportive. And for yourself, personally, me as a Marine mom, there's a fierce Marine mom group out there that you can I'm a part of. And there's lots and lots of support there for parents. And those support groups are the same, I would imagine, across other branches.
Yeah. So, Matt, you know, you talked about the size of your company and really the effort that went into it. There are companies out there that really would like to become a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon company, but maybe they just don't have the team that can really put it all together. So is there any type of advice that you might provide to that type of a company? I mean, other ways that they could support other than going through the proclamation process?
I think starting small, regardless of what you're going to do, is always the easiest way to do it. And there are volunteer opportunities through the VA. There's volunteer opportunities through the American Legion. There's a lot of ways in which organizations and individuals can become more involved with how we support the military community. And those things lead to great networking that maybe allows you to see the Beyond the Yellow Ribbon process as smaller bites of the apple.
Yeah.
And it's how we've led our business. And I think that when Sarah and the leadership team started the process of becoming a Beyond the Yellow Ribbon organization, they went to different proclamation ceremonies and they learned about it and they asked questions. And I just think that that curiosity around how do we be of service to the military community here is the best way to start.
Yeah,
but
no,
doing something is always good.
Building that network too, whether or not you become a Yellow Ribbon organization, you can still support other entities that are supporting our military community. So Sarah, a minute here. You know, you've gone through the hard work. You got the proclamation. The work doesn't end. So do you have other things in mind, other goals that you have for Replenix as it relates to supporting the military community?
We are still new at this. So we're learning as we go. We're kind of doing trial and error. We're, you know, opportunities are coming to us. You know, hey, can Replenix help with this? Could Replenix help with that? And we're, you know, we're, yeah, we can take that on, or no, I'm sorry, we're, you know, we don't have the capacity to take that on. But we're trying things, and if it works for our organization, great, we'll keep doing it. If it doesn't, we'll just kind of keep looking for what works for us. But we're definitely a service-minded organization, so we have lots of volunteer hours that are available for services.
That's awesome. It's great that you know, you both are supporting, and obviously it's great to have the president and CEO supporting an initiative like this. So Matt, Sarah, Replenix, thank you so much for what you're doing, for your proclamation, the process you went through, and thanks for taking care of our military members and our community, and thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio.
Doug, thank you so much.
Thank you, Doug.
Calling in from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonhardt. Tim, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you. It's always an honor.
You know what? It's great to have you on. And, you know, we only have you for a couple of minutes this time around. But one of the services that you all provide, you know, in addition to redeployment ceremonies, deployment ceremonies, and honoring our fallen, you represent at something called repatriotizations. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, what it is like the one that's coming up, the soldier actually was lost in World War II, and his remains were unrecoverable. And at that point, they're no longer, you know, their families don't know, you know, they don't have closure. And what happens is the U.S. has adopted to try and find all of those soldiers that were missing. And a repatriation is when they find the remains, they send them back home, and then they have a proper burial, military burial. We're asked to meet them at the airport and welcome them home when they arrive. Sometimes we're invited to the to actual funerals. But it's always an awesome thing. This month, we have one that's for a gentleman that passed away in 1945. So that's 79 years that he's been missing.
Wow.
And he's finally coming home. And we have the honor, and we've been asked to be at the airport, it's Fire Station 1, and welcome this soldier home.
I would imagine, Tim, that, you know, although each service, each time you do a military service, you know, it touches your heart. But something like this must kind of really fall into a special place.
It really does. I mean, here you have a family that's been waiting 79 years for their loved one to come home. Sometimes the original family is no longer there, but there's relatives that are still waiting.
Wow. Hey, Tim, if someone's looking for information about Patriot Guard, where would they go?
MNPatriotGuard.org.
Go to that website. They'll get information. They can sign up to get the newsletter. And you're looking for volunteers still, aren't you?
Always.
All right, Tim. Well, hey, I appreciate the work that you guys are doing, especially as it comes to these repatriotizations. And I really appreciate everything that the Patriot Guard's doing for us.
Thank you, and it's always an honor.
Thanks for joining us on Minnesota Military Radio. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us to send us your thoughts. Be sure to join us next week when we get an update from the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery in Redwood Falls and discuss suicide prevention with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.